Awesome, Indra. Thank you.
So Stephanie, you got that request for a roundtable about music acquisition?
Yep, I wrote it down.
Okay, I'm going to move us right along. We got three more people, and I know it's getting late for folks on the East Coast. So Matt Murphy, you're up next. Can you introduce yourself? And it's you're on.
Okay, well, thanks for having me on.
Oh, and by the way, Matt Murphy is in WERU in Maine.
Yeah, we're on the coast of Maine, just a little bit of a rural station area. Kind of a typical program schedule. It's very diverse genres of music, about three quarters music and a quarter news and public affairs. I don't know how many genres we have, a lot. And we have about 75 music volunteer music programmers. And our training, our programmer training since COVID particularly has become very individualized. And I think that that has worked out for us better than when we'd have a group come to take a class as a group and go through everything as a group. Individually we used to think it was going to be too time consuming and you want to get people together and do the class once for five people. It's turned out to be just as efficient and maybe more efficient to do it for one or two people at a time. When they can do it as opposed to at a set time each month that like we were doing before. I think we were missing some people that way. I just want to mention a few tools. I like tools, and these are kind of some randomly, I just kind of looked at our training kit and pulled out a few tools just to mention. And one of them is in this individualized training process that has kind of morphed over the COVID times, is starting with an interview. Instead of starting with come to this orientation and anyone can come, and is to have an interview with me, a 15-minute chat. And it's not kind of an interview like a job interview, but it's for me to get to know them a little bit, where they're coming from and what they want to do would fit, and for them to see what the process is. Here have the process described and what the opportunities are at any given time. And then they can decide whether they want to invest the time. And they've only invested 15 minutes, and we've only invested 15 minutes just as an icebreaker. We used to have people come to go to an hour and a half training and orientation. And that what happens now is the orientation happens after the quick get-to-know-you interview. And that's been a helpful thing, that little interview. Part of that interview, and then as we get into orientation and then specific training on the policies and the performance of doing a show, is to, right from the start, this gets into some of the things that Sybil was talking about. It's getting people's attitude in the right place. And the right place is a pretty big place in community radio. It's not all that narrow, but there are still some guidelines. And one of the things that we try to stress right from the start is, as a volunteer programmer at WERU, you're providing a community service that's really fun to do. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of fun. But our mission isn't about giving you a show. Our mission is about serving the community. And you're a hugely important part in that. But audience first and community services first. And when people start hearing that right from the start, those who just want to do a show just for themselves and could care less about anybody else, they get the message right at the start that this isn't really a good place for them to do that, that they can do something on the internet privately to themselves, and they don't need the radio station to do that. And so audience first and community service first is one little kind of thing that we try to keep them to keep in mind. It's a little tool that talk right from the start is really important. And let's see, another tool that we use is our program advisory committee does, after someone goes through the training and gets certified and is either filling in for someone or getting in a collective on a particular show, is that after 3 months on the air, they get an evaluation by the programming advisory committee. And that evaluation is not on, are they a nice person? Do we like the show? Is on some kind of nuts and bolts things. Do they do the station ID appropriately at the right times? Is their microphone technique good? Can you hear them well enough? Do they announce from the community calendar? Do they promote the website and the app? Do they do their playlist frequently enough? Those kind of things. So that those are the tangibles. And we used to find that our evaluations were very much focused on the intangibles, and we'd have programming committee, program advisory committee members saying like, oh, I really like that show because they're a really fun personality. And somebody else would say, I really don't like that show because I find them irritating. And that really didn't help our programmers that much, by knowing that some members of the committee thought they were fun and nice and other members thought they were irritating. That doesn't really serve them any. But these, the mechanical parts of the show, the hooks that you hang your coat on, we want all those all to be up to snuff, and everyone can do that. And every member of the committee can evaluate people on that. And then in our evaluations, there's also room for the intangibles about commenting that someone is really seems like they connect with listeners well because they're engaging and those kind of things. So we make the evaluation as objective as possible with some room for subjective comments. And then the programming committee, they fill out these forms, and then the committee, when the committee meets, they discuss these forms before they go to the programmer. And that's when some of the subjective thoughts about the shows come up as well. And the program advisory members, the PAC members, can talk about this. And if there's some major theme, that will get passed on to the programmers as well. And the programmers get the forms that the PAC members fill out. And we try to encourage the PAC members that this isn't like you're not like a theater critic. You're a coach. You're part of a coaching team. So make your comments, in a way that you would want them to be made to you, that are in a supportive manner, that we're giving everybody the benefit of the doubt that they're trying to do the best show that they can. And so with that in mind, give them feedback, in a way that you think will be helpful, as opposed to getting someone to snap to attention. They're already paying attention. They get handed this little packet. They get handed this little packet of feedback. And we have not had, since we've been doing it this way for 5 years or so, we haven't had a single programmer complain about, you know, who are these people evaluating me and where do they get off? They're usually peers, mostly other programmers, with a few people who kind of graduate from the community advisory board onto the programming committee. But when they're done the right way, they're very appreciated by the programmers. And it's a great way to help them in the first 3 months of getting going. They get feedback from myself and our program and ops manager. They do get that, but it's also good to put in the mix input from experienced peers. And then one last little tool that was kind of like a mini revelation to me, that maybe all of you already do, but when we were trying to transition some of our people back into the studio as COVID, you know, moved along, we were trying to keep it so that there were no two people hanging out in the studio together for more than just a couple of minutes. Pretty typical strategy. And the way we tried to do that was saying, instead of ending your show at, you know, saying your closing comments at the end of the show, as most people do, and then going to the automation computer for underwriting announcements, instead do your closing comments before your last song, and then play your last song while you get your stuff out of there, and you can fade down, and so then you're not in there as long with the other person. And we did that way back when we, you know, you didn't know how long people could be in the same room together and it was safe, but we were trying that. So we got everyone to do that. And then afterwards, it turns out that it sounds better for us, that there isn't this someone at the end of the show trying to fit in everything they want to say and then going over, or looking up at the clock and saying, oops, I'm running out of time. Time for some, you know, like this kind of chowdered kind of delivery. People say their goodbye with plenty of time. They say all the things that they want to say and are supposed to say, and then we'll finish out with this track. And they, if they want to play the most of the track, they'll get their goodbye done early enough so that they have 3 minutes to play the track instead of 30 seconds to play 30 seconds of a track then fading out. And the people who like tend to like press it into other people's shows and are late getting the underwriting and promo announcements on, we have to counsel them on that and advise them on don't do that. And they learn pretty early on that, oh, if I wait till 3 minutes off to play my last song, I don't get to play much of my last song. So people have kind of caught on to that. So, so those are just a few tools out of our toolkit. I've heard so many great things, in this round table today. I thought I'd just throw out a few of the things that we do. So any questions, I'm open. No questions. I don't want to answer anybody's questions.
Thank you, Matt. Any questions for Matt? Well, I think they heard you, Matt.
No. I'm just kidding. I'm fine with questions. I was being a wise ass.
I always have a question. Thank you so much, Matt. Always great information coming from you up there in Maine. Thank you so much. My just quick question this time was, who is your programming committee and how do you decide who those folks are?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It used to be that it was elected by the volunteers and we did a yearly election for 3 of the 9 seats on it. And then we got to the point, and I actually, when I was first a volunteer, I ran for the PAC and lost. You know, it was competitive. And and then people stopped running for it. We couldn't get anyone to run for it. So the board changed the charter of the committee to say that it is a board member is the chair of the committee, and working with the staff and the to recruit people who programmers who, like, I don't know what other way to put it, seem to be have their head on straight about the mission of the station and are good programmers themselves and get it. And the board president approves anyone who the committee wants to bring on. So if I'm on the committee, I can say, hey, so-and-so is really great. Why don't we talk to him? And the chair says, hey, anyone have any problems with this? Would this person be good? And everyone says, yeah, sure. And the board president, though, has to say, yeah, let them on. It's just sort of a checks and balance. But our board presidents have always been good about it. So right now we're about to bring 3 people on, 2 of them, one a programmer, one a former programmer, and one a member of the community advisory board. And their names were put before the committee, and the committee, nobody had any problems with any of these people. And we had 3 open seats. So the chair of the committee is going to approach them and say, hey, here's the charter. Here's what the committee's about. Would you like to join for a 3-year term? So when the committee was voted on, it had a little more clout in the sense of policy. But now it's purely advisory, both to the board and to the staff regarding programming and policy, but it doesn't pass policies.
Bruce, you had a question? Bruce, you there? Bruce disappeared. Okay.
He put his question in the chat, I think.
Oh, okay. Do you see it, Stephanie? I don't see it anymore. I saw him put his hand up, but then he disappeared.
There's a thing in there that says you're not a theater critic, you're a coach. Great advice. That may be what.
Okay. Jim, did you have a quick question before we move on?
Yeah, Matt, this unfortunately isn't a quick question, but, you know, how are you, I don't know if you guys get Nielsen ratings, how are you guys in your evaluation process integrating audience and Nielsen ratings and money coming in? I myself served on the program council in New York for 2 years, so I regarded that as a wild experience, end quote. But how are you doing that? I'm just curious from you and other people, how are you guys doing that?
We don't use Nielsen ratings. We're not in a market that a big enough market. The closest market is about 30 miles away, which isn't too far, but when they, the data wasn't any good. It was like they got six diaries, you know, and they told us one time, this is your most popular show. And then the next time it didn't even appear on the screen because the sampling is so small. So we haven't bought any in a long time, bought any diaries or reports in a long time. As far as in terms of like what evaluating, we don't evaluate the shows based on how much they bring in during the drives. We just know the shows that particularly have charismatic, the ingredients in a good fundraising show, it seems, are charismatic host, good time of day and good pitching. And that good time of day can't be had by everybody. Nice personality everyone can have, but not everyone's really charismatic. And, we don't pitch on every show throughout the day. We give people a break on some of the shows that traditionally, some of the strips across. We don't pitch on public affairs anymore because it never did any good. We have promos, but we don't do that live. Music is the horse that pulls our wagon fundraising wise. But we don't use it to evaluate, we don't use it to make programming decisions.
Okay. Thank you. All right. I'm going to move us along here. We've got two more folks, and thank you very much for those of you who have been so patient to give your presentation. I do want to remind you that the majority of the people that watch these roundtables are people that look at it afterwards. So even if a few people have dropped off, you still will have a lot of people interested in your presentation in the weeks to come. Thank you so much, Matt, as always. It's, great to hear what you have to say. Crystal Bunch is next. She's for the music director at KZMU in beautiful Moab, Utah.
Yes.
Where we all wish we were living.
No, I'm definitely very blessed to be here, but there's definitely, the country's beautiful. So I moved here from the Midwest and I've kind of been all over traveling. So, I'm noticing my little video is freezing, but is everyone hearing what I'm saying?
Yes, we hear you.
Awesome. Perfect. Well, I am the program and music director here at KZMU. I've been here as a DJ a very short time. I've been a DJ starting in 2019. I started as the music director in 2020. So I've only been here for a couple of years as an employee. I do have a simple little slideshow that I would like to share if it's going to pop up here on my screen. I don't know if it's we literally are like right next door to the internet the internet provider, and sometimes it's way too slow for what I would like for it to be. So bear with me just a second here. And one more click. Perfect. What you're going to see here as it's deciding to come up as a full slideshow and not just these little bitty things here are our new branding. This year was our 30th year as KZMU. We were founded in April of 1992. This thing is giving me issues, of course. So let me just, you're seeing this part, right?
Yeah, it looks like it's loading.
Okay.
Right now we're seeing a blank screen, but it's loading.
Oh, yeah. Let me just stop the share and go back in. But anyway, KZMU was founded in 1992. We have 7 trustees. We have 74 music DJs. We have 11 public affairs hosts. Oh, look, there it is. It's finally coming around on my side. But we started off in a single-wide National Park Service trailer that was up here on the site where we are now. In 2001, we had our studio that we're currently in completed, and it's next to the actual national park where the trailer was sitting. When we got rid of the trailer, we added solar panels there. So we are completely, most generally, the majority of what we have is ran by solar at this point. We do have some other equipment on our tower that runs off of it now. So there's a little bit of it that we're paying more so.
Did we lose you there?
Crystal, we lost your audio.
Crystal, if you stop your video, often the audio kicks back in if you have a bandwidth issue. That worked.
Well,
okay, we hear you again.
Perfect. Yeah, I don't know what's happening because I've had perfect internet this whole time and now it's my time to speak and it's messing up. But anyway, so as far as programming, we are Utah's only all-volunteer air crew radio station. Again, we have 74 music DJs and 11 public affairs hosts. We have the longest-running children's programming in the state. We have both music and talk radio programming, and we have live programming daily from 9 to 11 p.m. So I'm going to switch over here to this next slide. Hopefully it will load here. That shows the schedule, but I will send all of this to Stephanie so you guys can run through it. We have programming that is Indigenous programming. We have Spanish-speaking programming. We have reggae shows. We have Culture Blast, which is a world programming show. So we have programming for across the world and a lot of diversity. That's one of the things that we really take pride in, is making sure that we have diversity on the air. Other than that, what makes our radio programming successful? We have a DJ orientation and training schedule very similar to KZFR. They come in for orientation. We do two different shadowings in the production room where I'm watching them and training them on a production board, which is basically identical to what we use in the studio. Those usually run between an hour to 2 hours, depending on how confident they are. After that, we do 2 to 3 2-hour segments for shadow actual studio. And then once they've shadowed, we go into them doing their first show and I'm present as that's happening. So from 10 to 12 hours, I would suggest total time to get them actually on air. And it could be longer if they need to do a longer amount. I'm not going to just send them in there if they're not comfortable. So making sure they're comfortable. Another thing that makes the programming successful is the time of day when we're placing a show. We obviously want to make sure and be mindful of the shows that are coming before or after the show is starting. Like, we don't want that. I always make the example of using the language a train wreck. We want them to kind of flow very well. So that is a lot of what I do as far as the shows from hour to hour. Our music shows are 2 hours long. We have very few that are 3 hours long. But then also if there's a shared spot, just being mindful of if 1 week we're going to have this certain genre, making sure that the next week it's going to be a show where if our listeners at 2 p.m. listen on a Thursday, that the next Thursday at 2 p.m. they're not blindsided by something completely different. So just making sure that that's happening. And then also allowing the DJs to bring their own creativity to the show. Obviously, you have to limit them according to FCC guidelines, station policies, but just allowing them to be themselves and bring that to the station. I always have to ask myself, and I have the DJs ask themselves, does your show fit our community and our listeners? Because that's really important, because at the end of the day, we are a community station. We're a listener-supported station. So if what we're doing isn't benefiting or fitting for our community, then that needs to be adjusted. I think it's important to have ongoing support for our DJs. We constantly, again, with 74 DJs, I'm constantly getting text messages and emails from those DJs, and it's, I take pride in being able to be reachable and responsible and being able to contact them or providing other numbers that where they can get support if they need it, if I'm not available. And then we have just started recently providing mandatory FCC station and legal policy refreshers, making that to where the DJs have to attend at least one per year just to kind of refresh their memories about what should be happening and not happening. I think we get really comfortable in the booth, and it's nice to be reminded really what those little things are and aren't that you should be doing. And then the next one is just letting the DJs know, like, that they are appreciated. I think that that's one of the most important parts for me is making sure that they're aware that they're appreciated. The next slide. Oh, there it is. I hope you guys can see this one. Oh, let's go back, because it is monetizing and raising money. Our shows, we encourage the DJs, and if you can see this slide, to do their own merch for their shows if they have that capacity. So on this side, you're seeing a few of our shows. The first one, far left, is Cocopelli Coffee House. We have John Morning, which is our reggae show. DJ Danger is one of our kid DJs. And I Can Hear Clearly Now, which is also one of our shows. So again, we encourage the DJs to do show-specific merchandise all year, but mainly during our pledge drives. Again, making during pledge drives, curating a show that's relatable to the listener. You know, we've all had that time where we're sitting in a car and we don't want to turn off the radio to come inside, and that's what we want our DJs to be able to bring to people. And then also just creating, again, unique, spunky shows that people are like, what am I listening to? I want to call and pledge to this. Those type of shows. Other ways that we monetize in addition to pledge drives and show specific merch are underwriting live remotes. We have some DJs that have listeners that will do matching pledges for the pledge drives. We do a radio play festival that we put on and produce. We have Job Brunch, which is we take our Job Morning reggae DJs into one of our local restaurants, and they DJ live as we're simulcasting from that location, and then we participate in the local festivals, the street festival, the free concert series, and things like that. It's a lot of information really quickly, but this last slide is my contact information directly if you want to jot that down real quick before I make this go away. And then, of course, everyone else, Ursula and Stephanie, have my contact information too, and you're more than welcome to share it if somebody needs that. So a little bit of technical difficulties, but I hope that we made it through, and some of that was something that you guys could see and was worth viewing. So if you have any questions, I can definitely answer them or try to answer them.
That's great. Thank you so much, Crystal. It's really exciting to hear what you're doing. I'm kind of blown away by all this information that's coming from this roundtable. I think Robert had several questions for you. Robert, do you want to ask the questions?
You're muted, Robert.
There we go.
There
all right. I was wondering if you mentioned that the DJs have to do, that you encourage them to do their own promotions, like merchandise and other things like that. Is there someone on staff who actually helps them with that?
Because
a lot of them don't want to do it or don't know how.
No, I do it, and we have a tutorial that we have typed up. We use a company called Bonfire, which is a fundraising company, and they basically bring their artwork to me, or they follow the tutorial. We upload the artwork to Bonfire. Through Bonfire, you select the merchandise that you want to put that artwork on, and then you start a campaign, and you run the campaign. We always run our campaigns most generally coinciding with our pledge drive. And then anything, basically you run the campaign for your set amount of time. And then at the end of that, the dropship place prints and sends it all out. So I'm the one that And our general manager does a lot of that too. We coordinate that with the DJs and help them through that process. But now we've been doing it for a few years that a lot of the DJs are very familiar with the process. So they're also helping me.
And that'll help.
Yeah.
So the merch is being produced on demand, not in advance of the demand.
Correct.
Yeah. That's correct. Great. That's great. That's clutch.
Yeah. Yeah, because we don't have any out-of-pocket expense. The DJs don't have an out-of-pocket expense. The main thing I would say if you ever go that route, just make sure that, like for us, we sell our t-shirts at X amount, and obviously through Bonfire, we want to make sure they're the same amount, so that way our prices aren't all over the place. But other than that, it seems to work really well. I mean, we've brought in almost $3,000 in merch sales for our John Morning show. Just we had a piece of artwork. So,
what is the best merchandise for that? Kind of merchandise for that?
It's very seasonal, and they also have a lot of different merchandise. So we usually do sweatshirts, t-shirts, or tank tops, depending on the season. But also, I mean, there's mugs, there's tote bags, but I kind of discourage anything other than the sweatshirts and the t-shirts just because it is like a drop ship place. Once you start getting into this other things, like I had a really rad tote bag that somebody did, but we made $2 when they sold it. So at that point, all the work that goes into it isn't worth the $2. So you make your bigger profits on the other things.
So does Bonfire do the fulfillment? Do they send it to the client, to the donor, or do they send it to you?
They send it directly to the donor.
Oh.
And then, and after it's printed and sent, then they just send us a check.
Oh, love it.
Yeah, it's so, and I would love to like share that with anybody who would like that info because, again, I apologize if my slideshow didn't come up and work, but the graphics that were on there, I think we had 12 or 15 shows had their own merch last time. And two, as you guys know, doing pledge drives, you're buying all of this merch in hopes that you're going to sell it. But with this, we can buy less actual KZMU merch because we have all of the show merch.
Yeah.
So it's less money out of pocket for us too.
Yeah. And Robert, I think you had a question about support for overnight producers.
Yeah, but that's not one that has to be answered in this. The whole idea is that often with stations, the overnights, nobody gets in touch with them on things. And I mean, who wants to get up at 2 a.m.?
No, we don't. We have our last program ends at 11. So we have 9 a.m. to 11 is live. And then after 11, like usually one of us is up or has our phone on. So one of us, I mean, we have an emergency contact list with board members and staff. We have 5 staff. So there's always somebody that's going to answer the phone at 11 if they have an issue, but it stops at 11. Yeah.
Yeah. But because often they're separated from management and feel like they're separated from the station. That's what I was wanting to know.
Yeah. Our late night DJs love being up here by themselves because they just go in their little box and do their show and they love it.
Mm.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much, Crystal. And,
you're welcome.
And really appreciate your patience too in, going second to the last. And now we're going to go to the last person, Michael White, who, got kind of added the last minute and has been very, very patient. Michael is a Midwesterner along with us, with yours truly here. He's a neighbor over in Lansing. No, I always want to say Lansing, but it's La Crosse, Wisconsin. And he is, again, a music producer now, not a manager. So we're going to end with a music producer. Michael does a show that's syndicated by Pacifica called Broken Beyond. I think you originally were connected to WDRT, but then actually moved very quickly to becoming an independent producer.
Well, I'll tell the whole story. So
okay.
I'm going to share for just a second, if I may. I'm going to try to share. Where did it go? Okay, here it is. Desktop one. This is the one I want. And I'm going to, there, you can see, I hope, the screen. These are the stations now downloading Baroque and Beyond. So there's about 20 of them across the country. And I also have a webpage, www.bnbradio.com, where you can download 2 years of MP3 versions of the show and playlists. And the reason I emphasize that is every once in a while you guys get a request. We need to know exactly what you played on such and such a day because we're being audited. The last one to do it was one of the Canadian stations. And I have 90% of the playlists up at the webpage. But as you can see, I get a fair number of downloads across the country. So the story, by the way, Crystal, I'm sort of a neighbor. My parents were driving back to see my father in Salt Lake City, and they got to the city of the Golden Spike, Ogden, Utah, and she said, find a hospital quick. I was born in Ogden, Utah, and fortunately she'd been on Phenobarb for about 6 weeks after my grandfather's death, because I was born 2 months premature. I am retired military. I've moved 30 times. I've lived in 10 states and 2 foreign countries. I worked for Mayo. I am a doctor. I do have guns. But I was also the Green Party candidate for governor in Wisconsin in 2018. So I don't fit neatly into any, you remember, Sybil, you remember me. Okay. I don't fit neatly in any box. The nature of Baruch and Beyond is kind of an accident. WDRT was set up by 2 Linux geeks, friends of mine. And they gave a presentation at the Linux Geek Club about how they were setting up a community radio station with free open source software. And I said, gee, that's different than when I was a DJ in college. And they got all excited and spent 2 years twisting my arm until I agreed to do a radio show. I was going to do a folk show. They said, we got folkies coming out of our ears. How about classical? So I said, okay, I'll do classical. I have a few dozen, maybe 100 classical music CDs. I don't think it's going to go very far. After a month, they said, well, we're not going to produce your show. We got somebody here local, but you still have to produce it. Wait a minute. If you're not airing the show, why am I going to produce it? Because we gave you to KPVL in Postville, and you've been on the air in Iowa for a month. That led to KHOI. Ursula, wasn't I one of the very first ones you broadcast?
Yeah, you were. You were right at the beginning. Yeah.
Right at the very beginning. And so yeah,
feel like you belong to us, but.
I agree. I've done promos and will continue to do promos, but it's now almost 10 years. I produce it in a studio in my house. I have one room dedicated to the radio show. I now have about, well, I don't know, 2,000-3,000 CDs. By the way, those are all purchased out of pocket. And now that I know you can write to people and get free CDs, wow, that's a whole new thing. But I will tell you that you will hear music on my show that you won't hear on most classical music radio shows. By sheer accident, shortly after I started, I came across a CD, Baroque Bohemia and Beyond, and I wound up buying that whole series, and that led to all the music, classical music publishers that are in Europe. So 80 to 90% of the music that I produce is classical music produced by small orchestras in Europe, from Prague, Pardubice, Dresden, places you probably haven't heard of and conductors you probably haven't heard of. So a couple of comments, one of which is I don't get that much feedback, but if there's anything I can put in the show in terms of commentary that's helpful for any of the stations, let me know. I have done promos for a few of the other stations in the past. I use Audacity. I tend to keep my comments relatively short, although I've started doing more historical comments about the music, the history behind some of the music, etc. And it's all music that is in my personal collection that I've augmented over the last couple of years. I always finish with music, so there's no verbiage by me at the very end. I'm amenable to all kinds of feedback and changes if people want to share things with me. I'd love to see all of you doing it. It will be 10 years in production as of middle of next month. I plan on doing it for the indefinite future. It's a hobby, and in 10 years, I haven't missed a week. What's unique about it is most classical radio programs play fragments of things, like Sirius XM, for example. Very rarely do they play a whole symphony. I play the whole piece. I've not yet had a complaint about doing that. I also play chamber music and duets and trios and things you might not hear on other radio stations. I have improved my technique over the years. Originally, I was producing under less than optimal conditions. I'm having fun doing it. And with that, I will stop and ask questions or invite questions.
It's great. You know, it's great to have Michael on, kind of as the last word, because, Michael, you really are representing a huge part of our network that tends to fly under the radar, which is the independent producers. We have hundreds of independent producers that feel that they're part of the network and contribute incredibly and have much fewer options for resources than the radio stations and yet do really excellent programming. So, you know, thank you for being here as well, because you really are speaking for, you know, a huge amount of people in the network that really add tremendous value to.
Well, thank you. I was a little intimidated the long everybody else went on to all the various things that they do on a TV. I didn't know that, but Jim's got a question.
Now you know what you're dealing with. Yeah. Jim, did you have a question for Michael?
Yeah, I do. I was trained as a classical musician as a kid, Mike. So, I've always loved classical music. And I, years ago, interviewed for TV, a guy named Joseph Horowitz, who wrote a book, Classical Music in America, A History of Its Rise and Fall. And one of the things I got from talking to him was it sort of blew my mind that Arturo Toscanini used to have millions of people listening to him in the 30s. So we're dealing with a whole different phenomenon nowadays. And I was wondering what you think would be the characteristics. Let's say one wanted to create a 24/7 virtual classical music stream, and I'm also 100% in favor of playing complete, intact pieces, you know, not fragmenting them. Because when I've talked to people at WQXR, as you know, the marketing of classical music in the past 30 years has been essentially, you know, people can only listen to like 10, 15 minutes. They can only listen to movements. They can't listen to the whole piece. So what do you think would be an interesting way to, what would you imagine would be a way to really do a kick-ass kind of 24/7 classical music stream that has a lot of curators? Yeah, go on, babe. I'm waiting for you. Go on.
No, I'm just, you're just pushing a button. So I put my email in the chat before and Ursula's got it, but we should follow up on that because that's the direction I want to go in. And you pushed a button that I had forgotten about. So among the things that I do, which are too many, I'm a president of La Crosse County Medical Society. I'm on the board of the State Medical Society. I'm still part-time practicing. I'm on the artistic committee for the La Crosse Symphony Orchestra and used to be on the board of directors and, in fact, was one of the underwriters for some of the stuff we did. One of the things we did was we brought in Magic Circle Mime, and we had mime performers doing stuff on stage with Peter and the Wolf. The problem with La Crosse Symphony Orchestra is that the average age is like the average age of the public radio listeners. We're getting older. If you guys haven't noticed, I'm an old white guy. When I told my kids I was producing a classical music radio show, one of my kids said, "Dad, you mean like the Stones and the Bee Gees?"
Wow.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. But one of the things that I'm trying to do, I've been paying out of pocket for an internet geek to build a database for me. I have a database, which is still in progress, of all of the small community orchestras in the world. That's the goal. We have the United States. We have Canada. We have a lot of Europe. What I'm going to ask your help for, everybody on the call and everybody who looks at it later, is I want a contact point at your local community symphony orchestra. Because what I would really like to do, I've played the La Crosse Symphony a number of times. I want to play all of the community orchestras around the world and feature them at one time or another on a radio show. I am tired of the
St. Martin in the Fields.
Well, it's St. Martin in the Fields or the Chamber Orchestra of Pardubice. Most people don't know where Pardubice is. And I've actually made some tentative contacts overseas to do some interviews on the station of some of those composers and conductors, et cetera. And I've made a proposal to the La Crosse Symphony. Let's put together a chamber concert. I'll underwrite it. Let's bring somebody in and we'll record it and put it on the air and get some revenue for the symphony. One of the things I would like to see happen for classical music, get your local artist to produce something. We put it on the air. We record it. You have it available to put up on CD Baby or wherever, and you can download it and you make the money, because I don't care. I just want to get people to hear their local station. When we produce music, the symphony produces music that involves the students from the local symphony, the students from the high schools, that's the best attended concert of the year.
Yeah.
So yeah, how do we support our local community? We do community radio, community classical music, and we put it on the air. I'll shut up. Go ahead.
Well, I've always felt that we should go Kiss Ass at Juilliard, which is a local community school in New York City, okay? And has lots of talented young people. And, in terms of, yes, I agree with you going into these little, cause I'm a big Deutsche Grammophon freak. So I know all these kind of orchestras you were talking about in Europe. This is, I think it's one of the many ways that we could add, value. I'm talking now from the point of view of Pacifica, cause Pacifica used to actually integrate classical music in its early years completely. And, I just think it's just one genre among many that has to be exploited, but it's really exciting. This has been a mind-blowing day to listen to you guys. And I should note that, we're going to follow this up on the 23rd, because obviously having everybody rap and talk about this, you know, I could see it'd be really fun to have people just simply free from presentations. And let's talk. Let's brainstorm. And I thank Ursula for doing this, because it just gave me so many ideas listening to you guys talk about this stuff. It really is exciting. And we've only scratched the surface.
I want to toot Sybil's horn for a moment, because she put it in the chat. She pointed out, she's about to get off, I think, that they're doing some recording sessions of their local people. And I think that that's cool. I think that's the model we ought to be following. And I'm happy to be interviewed on anybody's station. I'm happy to even make journeys to various stations to do on-air stuff. I'm a volunteer. This is something I do that turned into a passion. Instead of 200 CDs, now I have somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000. And I have on my webpage, I get downloads from all around the world.
I have a feeling there are other guys like you all over the damn place. We just have to figure out who they are and stitch them together.
Yeah. Thanks, Sybil. We need to talk. Any other questions, comments, tomatoes, peaches, watermelons, whatever?
Well, I just, Michael, you've been a real asset to KHOI. And even though we kind of consider you a local producer because you're kind of part of the family, even though you're not really, but you've really created a cornerstone for the classical music department at KHOI. So just really want to acknowledge your work.
Well, thank you.
And also, you know, it's absolutely true. Your willingness to come on anytime and help support fund drives, you know, even though you don't really get any monetary benefits from the show at all. And it's really, really, really commendable. Thank you.
Well, thank you to all the people out there doing what you do, because you all have mostly invisible jobs.
Yeah.
But public radio doesn't, local community radio doesn't exist without you.
No.
Well, I'll probably want to brainstorm with Ursula, but everybody else, like, how do we move from here? Because I personally think this music issue has to be further developed and further refined and further gotten into. There's so many things that came up today. And we were, as I say, there's nobody from any of the Pacifica stations on, and that would be interesting to hear them. But I can certainly see in a future date, it might be good to just have people get together and talk. You know, and sit there and share ideas about what the hell to do. Because I'm gonna definitely want to hear this and write it down and think about what I'm listening to. And I want to thank Ursula for giving the opportunity to put everybody together. It was just terrific. Everybody was inspiring and positive. It was terrific to listen to all you all guys.
Thank you, Jim. Well, this was your idea, so
well, it is. Yeah, it is my idea. But you know, but what kills me is that, you know, like no one in Pacifica has done this kind of stuff, putting all the music producers together. You know, and we're not even putting, these are all folks from all the affiliates. And they're all doing incredibly creative stuff, as I figured they would be. I want to learn some more, and I want, you know, the objective of this is to really have it spill over and help everybody else. You know, really help everybody else in their local activities, what to learn from each other, you know, get their shit better together, frankly. That's my approach.
Thanks, Sharon. So for everybody else, I'm going to repeat what I said. If I get contacts from your local, even music teachers, you know, if we can find a way to, we've had guests that we have a competition. They have a competition lacrosse, the Rising Stars, and they get high school and college students to compete to play a solo instrument for a concerto. And I've made the offer a couple of times. Let's record this young artist and put him on the air. Yeah. And so far, nobody seems to take that seriously. But one of the things Pacifica could do, you're doing it for pop music, you're doing it for Latin music, you're doing it for other kinds of music. We could start featuring a symphony orchestra from Louisville, from Dubuque, from Ames, from Tempe, Arizona, and put them on the air and then talk it up before it's aired. And that would get more attention for the station and, for the music and hopefully build classical music. I just heard, the Harp Twins, a couple of young ladies that are classically trained and now with electric harps play rock and roll and jazz and similar things. And they're awesome. Okay. Let's get some of that innovative way of producing pieces of classical music and put that on the air. That'll bring in some of the younger listeners.
Right. Well, I want to share, I was doing a morning show slot a few weeks ago, and I brought on a Generation Z kid who had graduated from high school in New York City. She's spent the past 3 years doing podcasts. So her whole thing was on oral production. And she got on the air, and she talked about what the greatest hit for her age group was. The number one hit. We said, okay, why don't you do a segment? Let's hear that segment. And what amazed me was the reaction of people our age to her being on the air. It was like, wow. It was like amazing. It was sort of funny. It was like they were actually saying stuff that I remember I was berated about in the 60s. So what I sort of feel is that it's really important to set up like something we did here in New York, which we weren't able to exploit as much as we should have. But, you know, we had a kid come in and wanted to do a talent show for teenagers. And the development director at the time was sort of a little rigid, so she sort of rebuffed the person. It turned out one of the board members is in the station. He grabbed her. He organized this talent show. 2 months later, there are 50 kids from all over the city of New York, from the public schools, from the private schools, from the specialized high school, and they were performing downstairs. And I personally said, you know, you guys should replace us. You guys should be the ones who take us, you know, come in. We need your energy. And so, cause I know what the statistics are. They don't listen to terrestrial radio. We all know that. They're listening to devices. So we've got to figure out a way to capture that energy and let them do their thing. And working with us older farts here. But have them really work together. We work together and help them, you know, mentor them and let them do their thing. You know, and that I think, and the classical music thing, I think there's a solution to that too. We just have to figure our ways out to put our noggins together and come out with some good solutions. Thanks. It was just really terrific, and I look forward to talking to you all again. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you know, Jet, are you on here? Yeah, I think, anyway, okay, sorry, I'm just a little organization snafu in my head. So, you know, topics, Jim, you're saying, where do we go next? I just, you know, I made notes on certain topics that people seem to really kind of, where the rubber seemed to hit the road a lot. And one of them was on social media. One was on being current and, you know, youth, training, support, and evaluation. classical music and music acquisition. Those are things that kind of jumped out to me. And if there's things that other of those of you on here can think of that I've missed, let me know. But I'm thinking, you know, I mean, we certainly are always open to free form, conversations on the round table. It doesn't have to be a lot of presentations. So, you know, we can always come back and revisit these topics. And, I know that everybody's very, very busy in their lives, and I appreciate how many of you showed up for today. But we could always, you know, try these as free form conversations and see how many people we can bring to, you know, to bring to that table and try it out. If that, does that make sense? Any comments on that? We're always trying to figure out what really works for people.
Well, one of the things we did at, Grassroots Radio, the time I came down to Ames, was a presentation on how to put a show together. And if we could do, some things like that, that would be useful for all of the, non-live producers, for all of your shows, that might be useful for all of the stations. Pass.
Okay. Thank you. I added that.
Well, I have allocated a time slot on KPTFX. I think Otis is here, and I would want that to be, I'm going to send it out to the system, to the PDs, and I'm going to want that to be more focused in on, you know, solutions. How do we synthesize all this information, you know, and what are the best practices, you know, because I've heard a lot from different folks today about the best practices. And it's clear that the stations, at least in the Pacifica system, that do very well are the stations that have had close relationships with bars and venues, with live rock bands or live bands over the years. And they had these guys on the air. That's, I'm thinking about Texas in particular. And they just grew together. And so that has led to financial support. And at the same time, there must be other creative ways with the new digital revolutionary technology to think of things we can't even imagine yet. And that's the sort of stuff I want to do. And this is just great to have other people here, people doing positive things and reinforce and get people out of their doldrums in different situations. It's great to break down isolation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, Michael, I really did relate to what you were saying. I mean, Ames has a wonderful orchestra, and KHOI, you know, records their shows, and yeah, I hear what you're saying. I don't know why more people haven't thought of that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. You're wonderful, Ursula. And it's really, I want to thank Ursula for getting me in. One last story. She got me up on the air there. And I was initially sending things up to Dropbox, and they were downloading it for Dropbox. But the night before their first morning on the air, I was at a Gilbert and Sullivan opera, and I got this panicky phone call. We can't download your show. Will you upload it to AudioPort? And I said, what's AudioPort? And Ursula talked to me about re-uploading my show to get it to them for the first time they were putting me on the air. And at that time, as you may or may not know, their tower was remote, and they had to go out to the tower and manually load it to put it on the air. And she was doing it in all kinds of really crappy weather. So I owe you a big debt of gratitude.
This is true. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody. Any other comments? I know this has been a 3-hour meeting. So,
Ursula, this is Heather.
Heather. Hi.
Hi. So just so everybody knows, I've been listening to this. I'm live in Atlanta, but I'm driving to Birmingham for an event, right? So I was listening to it on the road all the time. It was just wonderful. So Ursula and Jim as well, and all the, I don't know who is still on the call, but I was so impressed with the comments, excuse me, from all of you. It was just so impressive. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Did you guys just see that animal that crawled into my screen? Anyway, that was wild. Anyway, thank you. Thank you, Heather, for being with us. I saw you join us, and I was really happy to see your phone number show up.
Well, I kept getting knocked off as I was driving, and I would stop and get back on again. But I just, it was just so incredibly impressive, and I look forward to listening to the recording of it as well. It's just what I'm saying about being impressive is just the, all the vast array of ideas that people have and what they're doing in terms of bringing in the community and so forth. So thank you to all of you, really, for this great work. So great.
Thank you. Thank you. And I also saw the numerous people kind of made connections with each other in the chat. So, you know, that's great. It's great to see that, more folks are finding each other and, you know, have conversations they want to continue with each other individually. It's really great to see. Okay. Any final words? Otis, anything you need to say? Ken, Gail, I'm trying to think who else, Patrick, anybody who has not spoken, any comments?
Hi, this is James.
Hi, James. Hi, James. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, no worry. Just for those who don't know, I'm the putative treasurer of Pacific Foundation. Been listening. It's wonderful. Don't have anything to add, but thank you all. Thank you, Ursula, especially. And that's it. Just want to let you know I'm listening and impressed. Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us, James. And I have to say, James is a just a tremendous help to the affiliate network, our network office. I always really appreciate the support that James gives us in hard times at Pacifica, right? It's great to have people pulling for you and helping you out. So thank you, James, for everything you do.
Well, thank you for that. And right back at you, Ursula. You do a great job. You really do.
Thank you, James.
Ditto on that. And I was just curious if Otis or Ken or other people had any comments. I want to put you on the spot, Otis.
Otis, silence is consent. You know?
I had a different impression of what this would be like.
Well, go on, Ken.
Okay. Okay.
That's pithy. What about you, Ken? Ken, you had a comment?
I had a comment. I had a different impression of what this would be like than what it actually was. So it took me a bit to realize what I was listening to, what I was going to be listening to.
Okay. What did you expect?
Incorporating music in different ways, in different kinds of shows.
Oh, okay. Great topic, Stephanie. Write that down.
part of it is to get the music shows, to help all the music shows throughout the whole system in both the affiliates and the network. And that's why I want to keep on pushing this. And I guess Michael must have been listening to HMS Pinafore. Is that what you were listening to that day with your Gilbert and Sullivan opera? Or am I wrong?
No, I think that's what it was. It was the Pinafore.
Yeah, Pinafore always can get you into certain heads.
Well, it was fun, but I had to leave halfway through it to go home and re-upload the music. I only got to hear half of it.
Well.
Okay. Well, I think we're at the end of our rope here, and I really, really appreciate everybody and their comments, questions, and
thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. And, there's all of this could be, you know, really broken down and discussed in detail. And, you know, send us your comments, what you would like these roundtables to be. And we'll certainly, add that to the schedule. Right, Stephanie? And I see Bella is there. You see Bella with Stephanie? She's our office dog.
Bella came to work today.
Oh. Oh, a long-haired dachshund. Great.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we love more ideas. Please send them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's great to collaborate with you guys, and it was fun, and we'll do it again. And, you know, as I say, the 23rd, I want to do something where we're just going to simply talk about implementation. All right. Well, thanks a million.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Take care.
See ya.
See you.